And welcome, everybody, to this week's Freightonomics, where we talk about the macroeconomic environment, the freight market, and a few other things, and mash it all together into one digestible piece of content for you. Zach Strickland, head of market intelligence. Tony Mulvey, head research guy.
Research guy.
Economist. Yeah. Didn't know that. Learned that a few weeks ago about
kind you. Of economist. How's that?
Got a degree in economics. That'll work.
It counts.
You know, it counts. So big week this week with some releases. We're going to get into that with J.B. Hunt, Knight Swift, talking about some upcoming stuff, as well as this overriding sentiment that the market is going to turn at some point. Yeah. We've talked about it ourselves. The data does support it. It's not like it's founded in nothing.
Yeah.
A 24, 25 month cycle. You know, Craig Fuller, our CEO and founder, writes an article this week. We'll talk about that, break that down. But there is this overwhelming kind of expectation that this cycle is coming to an end within probably the next 12 months.
Yep.
Some point in there, high confidence within the next 12 months. 6 months, maybe. 12 months, most definitely, is what a lot of, you know, people are thinking, including myself. Now, it's hard for me to think that we're going to get noticeably tighter in January, February next year.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that that's going to manifest in that same way. I think Christmas and the holidays, you know, peak season, as you call it in transportation or the trucking sector, tends to be a good moment.
Yes.
And I think that's what everybody's really kind of leaning on, is that third, fourth quarter, that's that holiday shipping, consumer really gets going. Our demand situation ain't that bad.
Nope. No, it's not. And I mean, Zach, I think you know what that means. You kind of need to set the stage with where we're going in the market. So I'll count you down here in 3, 2, 1.
All right. Leading off the day with the outbound tender reject index, counting the percentage of loads that is being rejected or being rejected by carriers from shippers under contract. And you can see a little bit of that nudge. That white line is crawling off the floor there a little bit. You know, blue last year and the green the year before that, when we were coming out of the COVID pandemic stuff. Not anything that's super tight, but we're back over 4%. And this is April. This is not a super tight month. So the fact that this thing is moving higher, this time last year, we were actually moving lower. We're not near the end of the month yet. So it's not that. And I know it's incremental. It's very, very small, but the direction is important to watch. And especially as we hit that Memorial Day, second half of May, I'm keeping my eye on this. So this actually does support a turn coming this year. Let's go to the next one. And I pulled up a little bit more of a complicated look. This is the contract rates in blue versus the van outbound tender rejection index in yellow. And there's some directional stuff here as well. You see contract rates coming down, you know, to a floor. We're kind of leveling off here. They're still coming down, though. Rejection rates almost have this inverse correlation to them. As those contract rates come down, tender rejection rates are coming up. This makes too much sense. It's like an alligator mouth. It's like capacity is closing in on that demand side characteristic. Contract rates look like they are only going to get more tenuous moving forward. Let's go to the next chart. And looking at the NTIL, this is the spot rate. Also has a little bit of an upward movement on it here at the end, a little downward stuff there in early April. Now we're reversing course. Spot market rates are still extremely depressed. Let's go to the last chart and look at contract versus spot. This looks a little bit like an alligator mouth too. The overall trend of the spot rate down there in yellow is coming up even slowly, very slowly, and the contract rate's coming down. It's kind of the same thing with the rejections in the contract rates. The closer those two get, the more likely the market is to turn or flip.
Absolutely. And I think, Zach, that movement in the tender rejection rate, that it is slight,
right? Very, very small. Nobody's going to be able to tell in the world.
Yeah, the difference between 3.9 and 4%. But I think the important part is eclipsing that 4% in a time where nothing really, like in a normal market. Yeah, there's no reason. It's not, if it was normal, like,
it's not refrigerated.
Yeah.
Because the refrigerator
hasn't moved. I mean, it really hasn't moved.
Flatlining.
Yeah.
Flatbed's not a big enough component of this, even though they are kind of up a little bit.
Yeah.
Relative, but it's van. It's dry van.
Yep. That's which is what you need to see. It's mm-hmm. what you want to mm-hmm. see. I think that's the key, is like everybody talks about produce, right? Mm-hmm. And the constraints that can put on capacity.
It's not
it's not happening, right? Because if you think of reefer is the primary like winner during a produce season. Like, it's not changing a whole lot right now. And I think that's the, this is more fundamental change that's, I don't want to say starting to occur, but I mean, there's still, there's signs of life happening in the market, which I would argue was the first time, what, since late January when we had winter weather that kind of showed some fragility in the market, that it's the first time you're seeing at least some level of movement that you would expect.
And that's the type of stuff that I'm watching for. It doesn't mean that the market's going to dramatically turn overnight, but you are going to see these moments of sensitivity, especially at a regional level. As some of these smaller carriers and operators come offline, that's going to expose markets kind of unknowingly. Like, you're not going to know it happens until it happens. That's the trick with capacity. You can't, even if we counted trucks and knew all the trucks were perfectly in balance with demand, they're not going to be where they need to be because the market is naturally unbalanced.
It's the same. I think of it kind of in this way, that it doesn't matter. One day you might be balanced and the next day it won't be. I mean, the rejection rates change, where trucks get moved to changes on a daily basis. I mean, think about it. If you had a truck that was going, I don't know, say Dallas to Denver, Denver, not a huge freight market, right? Kind of.
What if nobody goes to Denver?
Well, yeah, Denver, and now Denver's completely starved of all capacity. So, I mean, same idea, right? So like, but you're pulling that kind of out of the Dallas market. Dallas freight volumes are strong.
Yeah, if they're busy covering Dallas to Chicago and they're making plenty of money there, why are they going to go to Denver?
Exactly.
Where there's a quarter of the freight.
Yeah, so it's not a, it's, you're not going to see it on a national level, but like you said, that regional level's really, and the market level, it can change very quickly. And you see it. I mean, that's where the weighted rejection index comes into play. You can see it happening and in real time at the market level.
And give it a little bit of a relevance to everything else. So I want to move into the economics real quick before we break down some of those earnings from J.B. Hunt and, of course, the expectations from Knight Swift. But Powell basically, you know, saying, we ain't cutting anything yet.
No. And we got on here last week and talked about the inflation number being hotter than expected, starting to increase, right? It's set up, I mean, this is exactly what it was set up for, not to have interest rate cuts. Guess what? They started talking on Tuesday afternoon. The market sold off instantly because everybody's expectations for rate cuts went from, oh, we're going to get one in June or July. Well, now we're looking at September, and a lot of people are looking at December before it happening. So it's like you're going from the possibility of three rate cuts over a 6 or 7 month span to that window is getting a lot smaller to make three rate cuts happen in a year.
And we got the big macroeconomic release kind of helps, you know, support. I don't want to make too big of an issue out of this. Like we talked about this a little before the show, but housing starts fell 14.7% from February to March. And permits down 4.3%. And this sounds alarming, but if we pull up the chart on housing starts, you'll see that this is actually not that far out of expectation. This is a very
kind noisy,
noisy figure to look at, as a lot of the macroeconomic data tends to be. But you're looking at permits in green and housing starts for both multifamily and single family there in white. And it is a pretty dramatic decline, mind you, but it's not like this hasn't happened before.
No, it happens regularly. And I'm not alarmed because most of this decline that you see in housing starts is driven by a decline in multifamily housing starts. Single family housing starts were down 12.4%.
That's pretty strong.
That's a pretty big decline. But you look at where they were a year ago, they're still up 21% year over year. Not only that, they're at their fourth highest they've been in the last year. Like that level is not where you look at multifamily housing starts. They're at their lowest level in the last 12 months. They're down 44% year over year, and they were down 21% in the month. Like,
because they were overbought, they were overbuilt.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the pandemic, multifamily housing got out of control. And they started building too many of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the, so, while everybody's talking
this
about
what happens in a free market.
Exactly. Well, yes. And then you factor in, okay, one, loans on multifamily housing are typically more expensive than what you're going to get in a single family. Mortgage rates have crept up slightly. I mean, they're not they're not as high as they were, but I mean, they're quickly approaching 7%.
I think, yeah.
So, I mean, they're getting, they're creeping back up. They're not,
but it's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, it's
bad compared to where it was.
Yes.
I think that's kind of the argument here, is that we've come from such a low interest rate environment and rapidly made it a high interest rate environment.
Yeah. Well, it changes things. And, but the site, we're still in a market that's undersupplied from a housing perspective. So, like, I think some of that explains why you're still seeing growth on an annual basis in single family starts, is that's where the demand actually is. It's in single family, not multifamily. Mm-hmm. It will continue. Like, these noisy months, rapid changes happen every, it feels like every month, and then they revise it each month. So, like, it may not be as down as bad as what it initially says, but we'll find out.
I'm with you. I think it's, I'm not sounding any alarm bells yet. Demand still looks pretty strong overall. We're not entering some sort of recession, a warning environment or anything like that.
Yeah. So I was going to say, if you looked at flatbed rejections, you saw them tail off at the back half of March. They've kind of bottomed out in early February or early April and started to move higher. Yeah, so
exactly.
I think that's kind of an indication of where housing starts are going to go at some point.
Probably. Those two tend to correlate quite well. And of course, flatbed leads the housing start market. Yeah. So let's move on into the news anomics, the news of the week, which of course is headlined by none other than J.B. Hunt post Q1 earnings miss. Todd Maiden does a phenomenal job on Freightways.com. He breaks it down exquisitely well, does most of the earnings reports for us. But so I want to kind of start off with the high level here. Expectations. I don't really personally care about expectations of earnings. Budgets are all wrong. Like they always fail. And so these earnings misses, I get it. You're in the financial space. You have to take that into account. That's what you do. You are making money off of pennies.
Yeah.
And the difference between the expectation and the reality. So that aside, I want to break down the operational output of J.B. Hunt. And I'll give a quick read high level. And Tony, I want you to weigh in on this one. Revenue. This is the biggest concerning factor, single biggest concerning factor for this, is that revenue was down 8.8% overall as an aggregate. This includes intermodal, dedicated, trucking, final mile, et cetera, even though the final mile sector was the one shining star in all of this, which is not something to dismiss. But OR, it's still a 93.4 pre-pandemic. That would have been a darn good OR, Tony Balvey.
Yeah. My takeaway, revenue down 8.8%. Okay. That's probably about right. We've had the van contract rates pulled up earlier and showed pretty much that's what
they're down about.
Contract rates are down about that much.
8-9% year over year in the first quarter.
I think the positive takeaway, if you look at, I mean, this is moving further down, a lot of what the declines are not in, it's not in volume, it's in pricing. Yep. So, and I think that's the takeaway, is that it's not that they're losing volume and seeing revenue drop. It's they're having to drop their prices to maintain the volume that they have. And I think that's the takeaway. Like, it's not a,
it's a pricing problem.
It's a pricing problem. And we've talked about it on this show a bunch, that it's the freight market has a pricing problem. And these large companies kind of feel it or show it because you get to see the actual results, right? Versus the smaller guys that you're not seeing it.
Let's pull up the intermodal section here that's in this article. And you can see it reflected here perfectly. You've got a revenue that's down 9.4%. You've got loads down 0.2%, like nothing. So demand has remained relatively strong in the intermodal side of things. However, the revenue's down almost 10%, and the revenue per load down almost 10%, et cetera. Cost per load actually went down.
It's good.
5.5%. So there were cost controls going on here. Yep. So that's exactly what you want. Overcoming the declines in pricing, because they had to be more competitive to win business, is what has, you know, really crippled this their situation. And intermodal, of course, is the largest component of GDP.
Yeah, it's 47% of revenue. So, I mean, you look at this 92.7 OR. I mean, it's you would like to see that sub 90, but I mean, overall, when you start getting into it and you see cost per load declining at 5.5%, you think of everything in the world that has gotten more expensive through the past year still, right?
Yeah.
We talked about inflation. Mm-hmm. It keeps going up. It's not like like the rate is coming down, but it doesn't mean that prices are coming down. Prices right. continue to go up, mm-hmm. just at a slower rate.
Yep.
To see the 5.5%, it offsets that revenue decline to some degree. Mm-hmm. And the question...
Yeah, it could have been worse.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But what I think it does is sets them up for a market rebound, because odds are you're going to see revenue come back. You're going to see volume grow. You're not going to have... If you can continue to run efficiently with these cost control measures that you've implemented, mm-hmm. guess what? That OR drops fairly quickly when you start adding to the top and keep the bottom number pretty much the same.
Yeah, let's pull up the O-Rail chart here, the loaded yeah. container volumes for both domestic, and which is in the top blue line, and international containers, which is the 20 and 40 foot containers that are down there in the light blue. Now, the 20s and 40s are not necessarily the thing that J.B. Hunt hauls. It's mm-hmm. the 48s and 53s that are represented there in the top line. And that's the domestic intermodal market. That's where you have people bringing freight across rail primarily. It's been transloaded at a warehouse on the West Coast, typically coming into Chicago, Atlanta, Dallas, et cetera. And you can see it's about flat compared to last year. If you just took that first quarter block, it is slightly higher overall.
It was the average in the first quarter was 3% higher. So, yeah. I mean, they came in slightly under the market, but I'm not going to read too much of that. The interesting part that they said mm-hmm. that it was nowhere in the earnings release, you had to actually listen to the call or read the transcript. Southern California demand or movements out of Southern California up double digits mm-hmm. year over year. I think that is, if that is a bullish sign, I love that. For the future, is that Southern California is growing mm-hmm. and it's up double digits in the first quarter compared to where it was a year ago. That is a positive sign, I would argue, for freight demand overall.
Yeah.
So
it's actually a warning sign
yeah.
for anybody that that ships off the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ones that are doing this are probably in a pretty decent position
yep.
for the third and fourth quarter. But, you know, pricing pressures will probably return to this space at a lag.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that intermodal is not capturing a lot of new business right now is because trucking rates are so depressed.
Yeah. The intermodal contract savings rate is sub 10%. Normally it's in the 15%. I mean, it's
above 15 to be worth
competitive.
Time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things. It's like, it's not, there's no benefit to moving freight into the intermodal space
right.
because the discount's too low, like right. too small. So I think that's something that is a pressure for an intermodal provider. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side is when the market turns, it's right. a benefit because you'll be able to be there.
Yeah, let's talk about dedicated real quick. There's some, because they did talk about how costs were a problem or a mm-hmm. headwind for them. But dedicated is a pure trucking. It's basically where the shipper basically owns the truck in this situation without owning the truck. J.B. Hunt manages it, but basically the shipper has access to that truck whenever they want it at a certain amount of volume, obviously. But it's a very consistent, stable business revenue stream-wise for J.B. Hunt. It's the epitome of consistency here. Mm-hmm. Revenue's down slightly, 2.2%, not a big deal. Average trucks down about 1.3%. Again, I always look at these truck lines on these earning reports because that's a measure of capacity exiting. dedicated, revenue-wise, it's pretty flat. Loads, slightly down, 6.8%.
Another thing to take away, their 10th largest customer in the dedicated space went bankrupt.
There you go.
And that could be a reason for it, right?
All you have to do is lose one. I mean, 6.8% of your overall book of business would easily explain.
And
it can be easily explained by one customer.
The next dedicated doesn't have a pricing problem.
No.
Revenue per load up almost 5%. That it does not have that pricing problem. But I mean, you think about it, the business model is
very
different. Yeah.
OR nice and stable, 89.1, good figure there. You know, and that kind of tells me that the costs weren't as big of a deal as they're making it, because this is a very stable. This is the same trucks moving dedicated that move in the for hire side.
Yep.
you know, let's go to the brokerage real quick before we kind of finish things off with the truckload space and then move into Knight-Swift real quick. The brokerage space, ICS, just nothing terribly shocking here. Yeah. Brokerage environment is arguably one of the worst we've ever seen. First quarter brokerage in general is bad, but first quarter brokerage now is horrid.
Yeah.
There's just, you know, we did have the winter weather. It made a splash for about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then, but then everything went away and it all eroded in February and March. Yeah, there was no seasonal pushes. There was nothing going on absolutely whatsoever outside of that 2 week space.
The only thing I would call out here is you saw a 22% reduction in third party carriers on Marketplace on their J.B. Hunt 360. I think that is a positive sign. It's a reduction in the number of carriers.
Right.
The question is how many of those were basically churned and how many of those actually left the marketplace, like the market overall.
Yeah.
I think that's a key metric to pay attention to.
And another positive sign, their margins actually went up.
Yep. Yeah.
It went from 13.4 to 14.3% margin. And I think the reason that we see some of this erosion in overall profitability, they cite insurance expenses here, integration of BNSF for logistics, also, you know, stuff like that. That's not on this sheet. We can't see it cleanly. But profitability by load actually got better. And that's, you know, there's some noise there that I think, look, if we had access to the entirety, we would figure out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then the truckload sector, last but not least, this is, of course, J.B. Hunt's the first typically that comes out with their earnings. It is a fraction of the size of the other entities in their business model. This is something a lot of people don't really know. Just ugly overall. 99.3 OR, down from a 97.6. But again, this is one of the most challenging operating environments on the planet. We've never seen this level or this length of time with such a soft environment. So making money today, you know what? That's
better than losing money.
Good. And look at the truck count. 10.6% down. They are managing their costs. They're doing all that they can. You cannot, I mean, think about that. You just removed 10% of your fleet.
almost a quarter. Overnight. Yeah. It's
there's not a lot that you can do there. This is just simply like such a competitive environment.
Yeah.
That you're having to lower rates, manage costs simultaneously. It's
and that can explain the next story that we're gonna get to, right? Talking about Knight-Swift cutting their expectations. Which is, to me, not a surprise in any way. And it shouldn't have been a surprise in any way. It was, they got optimistic. So, really, I think the key takeaways when I think about Knight-Swift's expectations, I mean, it was a fairly sizable cut in expectations. And that they're walking away because they don't, walking away from freight because they can't sustain the contracted rates.
Yeah, Knight-Swift said it has had to put more equipment in the spot market as it has walked away from some contractual freight. Now, this is a fascinating statement to me because if you looked at that spot versus contract chart that we had up earlier in the market update, spot rates are well below contract. That is a desolate wasteland. And talk about a pricing problem.
Yeah.
That freight is simply there. Yeah, look at the green line. It's well below contract on average. And therefore, they're choosing to walk away from that white line. And this is actually, in a weird way, and I know this is probably hard for a lot of transportation managers and shippers to understand, this is actually doing them a favor.
Yeah.
Because they are not going to service fail them if the market does flip next year. Now, this is right in line with what we've been talking about. But also, I mean, at bare minimum, these guys are trying to figure out how much of their capacity needs to be allocated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a challenge, I think, overall for Knight-Swift. But I think I think you made a good point about from a shipper perspective or transportation manager perspective that by them allocating more capacity, your risk, right? By them not driving the rate to the floor. Now you're going to come back to them when things go heat back up because you need that capacity, but they're not failing it for you, right?
I get asked the question all the time, why can't shipper and carrier come to a kind of a state of balance agreement? Like, hey, I'm not going to kill you on the spot. Hey, I'm not because of money. Yeah. Guys, it's money that drives every business decision. Yeah. And they cannot turn away margins that are going to pay their bills when, guess what? Your business determines that you need to take a 15% cost reduction when the markets lose. Yeah. Like, you have to come to a, and of course, index linking is a solution there to your contracts. But it is, that is such a hard game to play between two entities, especially if they have lost trust in each other.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I think it does come down to a trust factor, yeah. right? Because they know they're trying to act in their own best interest without working together in any yeah. way. And you almost, this is where data becomes so important to understand the full market, so you can have these conversations between the two that both sides understand what the yeah. other's going through. And that's the problem, is everybody gets siloed. That there is
that world.
That cross communicate.
Yeah, yeah, but I think it's also a sign. Guess what? Knight Swift is a pretty smart carrier. They've been around a long time.